welcome to the Wonder Woman podcast, where we discuss a variety of subjects all pertaining to optimizing your physique, building strength, developing a strong mindset, and tools to help you win at life. I'm Michelle McDonald, and I'm the founder of the Wonder Woman Coaching Team. We are a community of results-driven coaches and clients who believe that we can age like never before. Welcome to the Wonder Woman podcast. I'm your host, Michelle McDonald, and today I have a very special guest, Amanda Thebe. Amanda Thebe has been in the menopause space for a long time. She's been in the fitness industry for over 30 years. You can find her at www.amandathebe.com, and she has a wealth of information about fitness and especially around the menopause transition. She has a book out, which I highly recommend. It's called The Menopocalypse, and it's all, I love that, and it's all about her experience through menopause, which was maybe a very common experience, and her journey, she learned a lot about menopause, and the book is aimed, I was reading about it, the book is really aimed at other women as though a friend was giving them advice. So it's really very easy to understand and some very practical, helpful advice how to get through that transition optimally. You also have a podcast out with All Due Respect, which is aimed at the 40 plus gal who is going to go through that menopause transition. And it's a lot, there's a lot of humor, an unbelievable list of interviewees. And I just can't recommend that enough. I actually wanted to ask you, what would be your number one episode that you love from that? I mean, there's so many great ones.
So many great ones. You know, I really, thanks for having me, by the way. And I really enjoyed the conversation with Pauline Mackey. I think we've talked about this offline.
Yeah.
She is a neuroscientist and she wrote a white paper for the International Menopause Society about brain fog and Alzheimer's and the use of HRT. And she's literally the world's leading expert. And it was so refreshing to speak to her and so reassuring. So, but every season, there's always a new one. I've just interviewed Laurie Brotto, who is a professor at UBC in Canada, because we're Canadians here. And she is a sexual health expert. And so I had her on as well, and it just made me feel so good afterwards. I was like, okay, so, you know, our sex life isn't dead in the water after menopause. And just, she comes at it from a psychological standpoint. So yeah, I've had some, and I think like you, I try not to be I don't pretend to be an expert in everything. I can talk about things within my own scope, but I reach out to experts, and because we're respectful, and because we don't try and overstep the line, these experts are really happy to come on the show because it's a way for them to get to a new audience they usually wouldn't have access to, right? And I called it with all due respect, and I was going to ask you, do you know what that means? Do you know the expression with all due respect? Like, how would you use it?
I would use it because you're about to, you know, kind of poke a stick at something. Like, with all due respect.
Fuck you. It's totally one of those. Yeah. And I didn't know if it was like just a British expression, but you know, I would say to my husband, listen, with all due respect, it's basically like, and now you're going down. But it was a little bit tongue in cheek. Yeah.
There's so many things I want to pick your brain on. And I think, you know, how did I get in touch with you? I think it was on Instagram, and
I remember. Yeah. So we have a mutual colleague, associate called Anise Mukherjee, consultant endocrinologist, menopause expert, and she's my go-to person in the UK. There's a ton of menopause experts out there.
Mine too.
But she's the one. Like, she's literally studied this for decades. You know, she's an endocrinologist and menopause is her expertise. And she's got, I think, the most balanced and logical and intelligent view about menopause, where she sees every single woman and she understands all the data. I love her. And I think you had her on your podcast, right?
Yes, I did. I did. And it's funny that you said that she's your go-to, because she's my go-to as well. If I have a question, if I see something on Instagram and and it's a bit controversial. You know, it doesn't seem to fall into alignment with what, you know, like organizing bodies like the Menopause Society are saying. I'll run it by her first. I'll say like, hey, you know, this is what was said. This is the study. And then she'll get back to me. She'll say, oh yeah, I know that study. It's this or that. And here's another study that's even better. And it's something that I'd love to touch on with you a little bit, this idea of the hierarchy of scientific evidence, because I'm sure you've come across this as you're interviewing all these experts. And as you are doing your research, I mean, you start to think, well, you know, why is this person saying this? And maybe it's a comment saying, oh, but you know, this is going against what you're saying. And they're quoting a doctor, right? Or something like that, or a research paper. But the research paper maybe is low grade, right?
Or standalone, or just one mm-hmm. study. And so a great example of this could be the conversation I just mentioned about Alzheimer's and menopause and HRT, and often you'll get these sound bites that HRT prevents Alzheimer's.
And we hear that a lot right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see women comment on that. I'm taking it for the health benefits, for heart health, bone health, to prevent dementia. And I'm like, who's told you it prevents dementia? Because the data doesn't show that right now. And I don't think it's fair to expect the women on the ground to have to dig deep into the data and understand that. The responsibility goes to these doctors or whatever who are doing these sound bites, because they've seen this in their practice or whatever. They need to be very specific about that. If they're saying, you know, within our practice, we've seen women's, you know, cognitive health improve, that's very different than saying it prevents dementia. And so people like Pauline Mackey and Dr. Lisa Moscone are like looking at the work either specifically on their own and doing the research themselves, or they're looking at meta-analysis or every single piece of data that exists and saying the conclusion of all of the studies, not just one, is this. And what's really good about that is women don't even need to understand what a meta-analysis is. They just can go to the menopause societies who have that ready for them, that say the reason that we don't say this is because it's inconclusive at the moment, or we need more research. And there's nothing wrong with saying we need more research, because yes, we probably do.
Great. So I'm so glad that you brought all of this up. And so let's dive in here a little bit. So one of the things that I feel is out there, and I don't know how it got out there, but I do feel it's out there, is that an organization like the Menopause Society, whether it's the North American or the International or the Australasian, that somehow that information is either archaic, right? They're behind the times, which is just crazy, or that they have skin in the game, right? So maybe it's being funded by, it's really interesting how, it's a very interesting logical dichotomy right now that I hear in the space, and I don't know if you agree, let me know, but there's this idea that somehow patriarchy or some group is withholding pharmaceuticals from women.
Yeah.
At the same time that pharmaceuticals are the bad guys.
It's crazy.
Isn't it a dichotomy?
It's a dichotomy that I see as well. And I don't understand it. It almost verges a little bit on conspiracy, like these menopause organizations don't back women. And I'm like, that it couldn't be further from the truth. And I see this coming from, you know, we're going to dig into this as well. There's so much we're going to talk about.
We're going to go in. Yeah, let's go in, Amanda.
But on Instagram, right, there's maybe 5 or 6 doctors in the menopause space that have got really loud voices. And it seems as though it's almost like a cult following. It's that if this doctor says something, then it must be true. And they're almost believed blindly without question. It's very
rare. This is the expert opinion, right? Which is at the bottom of the pyramid. Well, it's not quite. They're just above lab, you know, animal studies. It's expert opinion is at the bottom of the knowledge pyramid when it comes to scientific hierarchy. So yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I just...
No, you don't need to. This is a conversation, and I agree with you, right? So if somebody is saying something like, you know, I've seen something different than the menopause societies are saying. And so therefore my practice is based on my experience and not on the medical guidelines.
And I'm more cutting edge. I mean, that's the presupposition that I feel.
I'm a maverick cutting edge.
I'm a maverick, I'm cutting edge. Yeah, which is dangerous.
I think it's dangerous. And I also think that it's like the buyer beware. That's like really, if somebody is saying, like one other thing that I see all the time is that, you know, the menopause societies are saying that HRT or MHT, as it's known everywhere, most places in the world, menopause hormone therapy, is a contraindication if you've had breast cancer. Right, so that's the current stance of the menopause societies. They say you should liaise with your oncologist to determine if you're a candidate or not. And if you're not a candidate, there are other medications that exist that are non-hormonal that may still be pharmaceutical, right? So that's what the current stance is. And some of the maverick doctors, and I'm going to call them that because I don't particularly think it's achieves anything by naming names. I just think that it's just an awareness, is that they will say hormone therapy is safe for women who have had breast cancer. And that usually it's backed up with that more women die from other diseases like heart disease, of which hormone therapy can help you with, than breast cancer. And I'm sat there thinking, you've just diminished somebody's experience who's gone through breast cancer that is horrible. I don't care if they survived from it. They've gone through years and years of treatment that's completely impacted their quality of life. You can't just dismiss that. And you can't just dismiss the fact that expert opinions from the menopause societies are saying that, you know, we don't think it's safe at this stage.
Yeah, that's in that. I thank you so much. And I definitely have heard that, and it's appalling because when you read that stance from these various organizations that have an expertise in menopause, when they discredit those systematic reviews, and this is the thing, guys, this is the thing I want you to take away, right? When you have systematic reviews or you know, meta-analysis, same thing. This is reviews that are done by a body of experts that sift through all of the, hopefully, thousands of research papers, and they have a way of grading those research papers from low level, right? Poor quality research design was done, not big enough, there was too much bias, like all of these things. They go through them, and they knock off the ones that they shouldn't be looking at, and they save the best of the best, hopefully a lot of RCTs, right? Randomized control studies.
Yeah. And then peer-reviewed studies.
And they pull out that based on all of this, this is what we can safely say we can prescribe for, right? And if we don't have enough information that says that we can make these, you know, prescriptions, then we can't say it. We just have to say at this current time, there's not sufficient evidence showing that X will cause Y, whether it's a positive or a negative, right? There can be ongoing research. But when we get to that meta-analysis, that means that there's a lot of research that they're looking at. So it's going to be very interesting if that research is turned on its head. It can be. But when we're talking about a systematic review of hundreds or thousands of research papers, you know, that says a lot.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I think it also comes down to personal preference and choice, because we are all adults and we all can make our own decision. I'm cautious by nature when it comes to my health. Like, I don't just want to just take something and hope for the best. I want it to know that it's safe. And if you're a woman that chooses to say, take hormone therapy after breast cancer or take unregulated hormones, maybe your risk profile is different to mine, but you're
exactly
making a choice, but you've got to know that you're making a choice that's potentially
you have to
outside
know about that, yeah, choice. And here we're getting into murky water, because
yes,
that and I always say that to my own clients, you know, make sure that you know make sure that your doctor, whoever your healthcare provider is explaining to you all of the risk factors. And this is, I love that they say that in the menopause society, like there needs to be a proper risk assessment based on the individual. There's so much variability there, and I am finding out just from my tiny slice of the world that most of my clients, in fact, I don't think any of my clients are ever walked through the risks. They're just not. And that's alarming, because that's not really a choice. You're assuming that you're being taken care of, that you're being given an educated, you know, prescription, and you're not being allowed to make the choice for yourself. And then you find out, unfortunately, for some people, the hard way, which is you end up with some kind of a diagnosis that you don't want to go through.
Well, that's sort of what freaks me out a little bit, is that because of these small sound bites, that women are being harmed and that we won't know about that for another 10 years or so. And there's also women that in the UK that have been prescribed like uber high doses of hormone therapy without the adequate protection, like estrogen without the added protection of progesterone, that have had either cancer diagnoses or they've had to have hysterectomies. And there's been, you know, a news article on it, and they're trying to raise awareness about it. And the thing that gets me is this, right? Hormone therapy is considered first line treatment for hot flashes, low bone density, prevention of osteoporosis if you're a candidate, vasomotor symptoms associated, maybe insomnia associated with that, and maybe some sort of like knock-on effects. So what it actually is used for is really good. So why do we need to oversell it for something that it doesn't do? That's what I keep thinking. Like, it's considered first-line treatment for most women. There's obviously those that can't take it. So why are you selling it for everything? And that's what I'm seeing. Have you got ADHD? Oh, you probably need hormone therapy. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening with the world? Like, it's crazy.
Exactly. And this brings up another wonderful point that I'd love you to touch on. And I'm sure you've experienced yourself, because, you know, you are, you know, I don't know if I said this in the preface, but you are a menopause advocate. You are an affiliate with two menopause organizations, the Canadian and the North American Menopause Society. You've interviewed people at the top of their, research game, or in their standing or position. You love the science. You very respectfully understand the limits of your area of expertise. So you pull in the real experts like Mackie or Annie Smokerjee. And at the same time, what we see is that people that actually are menopause advocates, and even women or doctors like Anise Mukherjee or Jen Gunter, who, as part of their practice for decades, prescribe hormone therapy, right? The moment they say, hey, wait a minute, we have to look at some other options for some people, right? Or that we don't know that it, you know, that hormone therapy does this for people, so we really shouldn't be selling it like that or prescribing it like that. The kickback sometimes doesn't make sense. It's as though these doctors, or as though you as a menopause advocate, aren't saying, hey, we know that estrogen is the gold standard for hot flashes. You're not saying that. You're not saying nobody should be taking it at all. You're just saying, hey, now we're drawing outside the lines and we got to be careful here. That's not what the research from the governing bodies are saying. Hey, meta-analysis, the big, 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 big study was done, and it's saying we can't say this yet. But here are these maverick doctors saying it. Or maybe your best friend is saying, oh, don't believe that. You know, I know this nurse practitioner. You can get the goods from her. It's going to cause all your, you know, solve all your problems.
Yeah, and you know what's happened? And so they sort of get the rap of being anti-HRT. And I'm like, do you realize that they prescribe this day in and day out? They just prescribe it for the right reasons. And, you know, I have a community group on Facebook, and it's got, I would say, about 30,000 women in. I don't actually go in very often. Somebody else manages it now. But I'm also in a couple of other groups. And on the very small occasions I go in, and it doesn't happen in my group because I just delete and block people who do this, is, you know, when someone would say, so maybe my hormone therapy is not working for me, what should I do? Well, the correct answer is you need to go and speak to your doctor. Or you could say, well, this is what worked for me, right? So you can share your experience. What you don't do is say, oh, just put more gel on, or just add an extra patch on. And then this is what's happening at a grassroots level, is women are encouraging other women and saying, like, put more estrogen on your body. And I'm like, do you realize that it's not a supplement? And even supplements you shouldn't do that with. This is a drug, and it's a powerful drug. Hormones are very, very powerful. And you're not a doctor, so you've got to stop doing that. And I just get a little bit freaked out by all of that. I just think that, is that, you wouldn't do it with a statin. You wouldn't do it with thyroxine. You wouldn't do it with any other drug.
Exactly. Exactly. And so two really important points here. One is that, you know, and I hope a lot of our listeners are going to go over to your website. I mean, I love that. I'm going to take advantage of it, Amanda. I love that on your website, you have a free downloadable directory, right, to menopause societies and governing bodies and just resources for women. You also on the website just have a list of great resources that you can click onto, and which is amazing. And again, like, you are yourself an affiliate to both of those organizing bodies, and you are by no means anti-HRT, and doctors, like I said, like Jen Gunter or Dr. Anise Mukherjee, are not anti-HRT. And healthy conversation, I wanted to talk about this with you because of your recent post. Healthy conversation means being able to have, you know, a dialogue with other people, not necessarily agreeing with them, but making sure that we're not getting into, you know, attacking people's personality, not even listening to what they're saying, right? So it would not make sense to attack you and say that you're anti-HRT. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to attack Dr. Guntar and say she's anti-HRT or Anise, right? So really having a conversation about what's actually on the table, not attacking people's personalities or their livelihoods, and really making sure you're talking about what the issue is and listening to what they're saying, listening skills.
But the social media doesn't allow for that. And I think that was like the crux of my post. So the post the other day, and I'll read it out to you because it was
I was like, uh-oh.
And so I posted Billy Connolly, who's a Scottish artist, a comedian in the UK, and I think most people know him. And it was a post that said, Billy's top tips on how to live a windswept and interesting life. Seek the company of people who, when left alone in a room with a tea cozy, always try it on. And a tea cozy, for the Americans that don't make tea in a teapot, is the thing you put over the teapot to keep it warm.
The little coat for the teacup, yep.
It's a little coat. And it's true. Whenever you go to someone's British house and they've got tea cozy, someone sat with it, sits it on the head. And it's just, it was a silly post, but the crux of my conversation under that was just like, oh God, social media sometimes is just so wretched. And I feel what happened is I went away over Christmas and left my phone at home. I forgot it. I completely forgot it. And my husband was like, we'll just buy one when we go away. And I was like, no, you know what? I don't need it. I'll use your phone to take photos and it's going to be good for me. And I just checked my email on my laptop on an evening. That's basically what happened. And it was so good to be off social media. It just felt so nice. And I just thought to myself, what is it that's making me feel like that? And I realized that it wasn't particularly the people that were coming to my posts. I bet you I've created my own echo chamber, because we do, right? But I think it was, I was looking at all of these other people that were posting, and all they're trying to do is like pick at people's scabs and, you know, prod the bear and be out there with this, like, you know, I'm a thought leader and this is what I think should be happening. And I'm just like, God, you all suck. I'm sick of you. I'm just sick of it. When I started social media, it was like, I used to like going on and feeling uplifted. And I have curated my feed quite a lot, but, you know, I still get sent lots of stuff like you do going, what do you think about this? And I'm like, yeah, it's trash. And I'm sick of seeing trash. But the thing that stuck in my craw was that it's trash, but this person's got like 600,000, 700,000 followers and people are blindly following her because I'm reading the comments. And that's the type of thing I was talking about. And it makes me want to pull back.
Yeah, which you can't. We don't need people like you pulling back. And you know, I was following a business account on socials, and she was talking about how important it is to, you know, kind of clear your cache. And you know, you have to be very careful of accidentally surfing and looking at stuff because the algorithm doesn't understand that. And it does understand engagement and how long you're looking at something. And so you can really end up like on your explore page, and now you know you have stuff that you don't necessarily follow popping up on your homepage. You know, it says follow. So you have to be careful with that because you're feeding the algorithm potentially what you don't want to see. And they actually recommend that have a burner phone that you use that's not affiliated to your Instagram account. And if you want to like do some Instagram shopping or go look and see what, you know, certain accounts are that you want to know, what are they saying these days, so that you can counter them with good, you know, science-based information, but you don't want to start getting all of that headed your way, and even followers from those accounts, you don't necessarily want them coming your way. That could be a very useful tip. So that's what I'm passing on to you. That could be very, very useful.
Yeah. I mean, I know I did something recently that happened to me as an example, just before Christmas, is a famous actress in Hollywood, Gabriella Union. She's our strong doctor. Yes. Sorry, Gabriella Union, and she'd been paid to promote Clear Blue menopause testing. It's something you can buy over the counter to test if you're in menopause, and it's a scam, right? You can't test for menopause, and it's been, you know, the Menopause Society have said, don't use it. Jen Gunter wrote a big down, and a couple of other doctors have said, save your money. So they reached out to me and asked if I would promote it. And I said, no. So I know how this works. It probably wasn't for the same amount of money as this actress. She promoted it and was like, I'm in perimenopause, blah, blah, blah. And I use this test and it's been perfect for me. And so I commented and just said, ladies, and I shouldn't have done this, but I did. Please save your money. This test hasn't been proven. It's expensive. You can determine if you're in menopause by symptoms alone. Download a symptom tracker and then find a provider from the North American Menopause Society. That's the best way forward. I then got absolutely attacked by people saying, you don't understand what it's like to be a woman in color in menopause. And the thing is, of course I don't, because I'm not a woman of color, but I wasn't diminishing their experience. I know their trials and tribulations in the healthcare system are terrible. But the answer doesn't mean pseudoscience, right? And I ended up deleting the comment, and I just was like, I've been attacked and I thought I was being helpful. It just completely got lost in translation. And I think that that's the problem with social media. You talk about having debate, and I like love having debate. I'm not right about much, although I am with my husband, but I'm happy to have debate back and forth. I'm happy to have my mind changed. And I'm also stubborn. So, you know, like all of those traits. But it doesn't often happen on social media because people don't want that. That's where the keyboard
is. It's mudslinging. It's emotional attacks. It's all that.
Harmony,
and again, the sad thing about this particular space, and I would say you're even more passionate about menopause than I am, because your experience of it started much earlier than mine did. And it was a tough one. Like you experienced what it was like to enter menopause, have no idea, or perimenopause, let's say, and have no idea what it is that you were going through. You went through a battery of tests. You tried different drugs. Doctors were not helping you. And it turned out you were a hyper responder to hormones. So hormone therapy was the worst for you, even though you tried it several times, different
doses, different brands. I tried it for 5 years. I kept thinking, this time it's going to work. Yeah.
And like you had vertigo and migraines and chronic fatigue and terrible depression, like all of these awful, awful things. And you were a gal who was in fitness. You were a fitness coach. You were in great shape. And all of a sudden, bam, things went awry, and yet you weren't able to get help from the medical community. And so that started this whole journey deep into menopause. You've learned as much as you could about it, and you wrote that book. And please, guys, go check out that book, The Menopocalypse. It's a great book.
It's a little bit cheeky as well. I mean, it really is like, It's evidence-based, but I did want it to be like your best mate's guide to menopause, like you said. And honestly, my story could be somebody else's story, could be the next person. And, you know, when we look statistically at like women that are going to struggle in menopause, 75% will have up to 7 symptoms. And only one of those symptoms needs to be horrible for it to impact the quality of your life.
100% agree.
25% will have severe symptoms that severely impact the quality of life. And that was definitely me. So I think I had the more extreme, you know, experience, but I think that I just was so frustrated about the lack of knowledge that we go into this phase of our life and we're never told about it. That's changing for sure. But policy wise, it needs to change. It needs to be in education and work. It needs to be everywhere, right? So that was the first thing. My education wasn't there. And I was like, come on, I'm in the fitness industry. I should know about this. I understand human physiology, but this was like a big blank area for me. So that was frustrating. And then the doctors actually, I was in Canada at the time when I was going through this, actually were really helpful, which is why I had 2 years of like testing done, but they were not knowledgeable. That was the key. They didn't even consider talking to me about perimenopause. They were like, yeah, you look like crap, but we don't know why. It was those type of things, right? And that was in their medical speak, of course. And so so it was really these gaps that were frustrating for me. So I thought if as an advocate and educator, if I could interview these experts and then put something together that filled some of these gaps, it was some move forward, right? But, you know, everybody's experience is different. Everyone goes through this uniquely, even though it's a shared thing that we will all, if lucky enough, go through. But one of the things, Michelle, that I think doesn't get spoken about enough is that like I had 8 years. 42 was when I realized I was in perimenopause. It had started before then. It had started earlier and I was fully menopausal at 48. And then I'm 53. We're both 53, right? We're twins. 53 yeah. is a good age. And I would say the last 3 years, I've been basically symptom free. And for most women in a 3 to 5 year window after menopause, they start to find this sense of self again. I think I said that like wrong, but, and then, maybe a light at the end of the tunnel, because I know in perimenopause, I didn't recognize myself. I was looking in the mirror and it didn't look like Amanda. I'd lost part of myself. And that bit came back in. And I think that it's sort of a bit of a gift, because you can sort of put your ducks in a row and go, well, this is important to me now and this isn't anymore. And it gives you a big self of sense of strength. Not just physically, but, you know, emotionally, mentally, and all of those things. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I mean, you do, clearly, and your mum certainly does, right? And that's why I'm so drawn to you both. And I think that when we fill the menopause conversation with dread and fear, and we don't empower women to understand what their body's going through and what's potentially going to happen, then we're failing women.
I couldn't agree more. And we also have to be careful that we're not silencing the experience of women that actually have a very joyful transition or find joy, as you said, post-menopause, when their hormones, you know, restabilize, or not their hormones, because their hormones are, you know, at the bottom in terms of estrogen and progesterone. They're I've got to be careful saying bottom. They're pre-adolescent. Right? Hormones.
Your reproductive hormones find like this equilibrium, don't they? They sort of stabilize. It's exactly that.
They stabilize and then your whole body stabilizes around it. And it's that you know, for someone, it takes a couple of years. For some women, that experience is not theirs. I mean, I have had the most bizarre, I mean, when I hear everyone else's story, I'm like, I had 2 cold flashes, you know, that's my ornery body, but 2 cold flashes. I'm like, I think, what is this? And I looked it up and I'm like, oh, no one ever talks about cold flashes, but you can actually have a cold flash. And that's what I had. But I have been waiting since I first got my period. I I had been waiting for this, that moment. Like, I can't wait till this is over. There's an end. Great. I can't wait. And of course, everyone thinks you're crazy for that. But there has to be space for everyone's conversation. There has to be space for women that anticipate this moment in life and love it. And they have to be allowed to share their story, not shamed. And there's a lot of that. You're not allowed to say that you're having a wonderful time and you love it. And in some circles anyways, not all circles, but in some. And, it, you know, if you can or can't or don't want to take HRT, that has to be allowed to be expressed. Again, you shouldn't be shamed or made to feel like, well, you're going to miss out, you're going to see in 10 years. And that's not what the science is saying at all. So we just have to allow it, not pressure other people and allow them to take their, to make their choice. And also just please, just really sharing as much, you know, evidence-backed, science-based information at the highest level as possible. And just being very conscious when we're advocating our own journey, if we're doing something that is drawing outside the lines, I would just implore people, please share that. Just please share that you are drawing out outside the lines and you're going against what the governing, bodies are saying you should do.
Be truthful.
Like I'm doing something high risk, right? I'm doing something high risk, but for me, it makes sense. It's what I want to do. And if I, you know, I'm comfortable with that risk.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Yeah. And then in addition to that, like, you know, I think people like you and I and your mom are like the ones that are like pushing forward that we have so much data for longevity when it comes to exercise, nutrition, stress management, sleep, and working on our like mindset. I know you're the journaler and stuff, and all of those things like are so important. And even in the thick of perimenopause, when if you're having a bad experience, it doesn't feel like you're making progress, you so are. These behavioral changes, this showing up, it's the stuff that's going to set you up for a healthy, long life, not taking the medication. The medication can be part of it or not part of it, but it's the other stuff that really is important. Yeah.
And that, and that's also important that we don't miss that, that, you know, if you need to take pharmaceuticals, they should be layered on top of what we know are the optimal, you know, nutritional approaches and the optimal, you know, exercise approaches. Like we know how wonderful weight resistance training is for our, you know, cognitive health, our cardiovascular health, for our body composition, for our bone health. And that's getting lost. And even, you know, even we're seeing some people attacked for even suggesting that doing these things. I just saw a post where people were being attacked for suggesting that cognitive behavioral therapy was a great option for dealing with stress and depression, and that it was as though, how is it being relayed? As though it, they were saying by suggesting cognitive behavioral therapy was a powerful tool to be leveraged, they were reframing it in a negative way, saying cognitive, they're saying that it's all in our heads. And that's not what suggesting cognitive behavioral therapy is saying. It's not saying it's all in your heads. It's saying that we can make a lot of positive impact by leveraging cognitive behavioral therapy. This is where things are going awry, and it's not serving women. If you're a real menopause advocate, it's not serving women.
It's not serving women.
Give us all of our options.
Give us all our, and the, in the UK, there is a governing body for medical guidelines called the, and it's NICE, National Institution. It's the NICE guidelines. And they revised their guidelines, and the document was 500 pages long. I tried to read it. I think I got about a third of the way through. They again looked at all of the data out there, and they put an emphasis on cognitive behavioral therapy because it had not had a significant place in the guidelines before. And the narrative that I heard, and even some advocacy groups wrote to their prime minister, the parliamentary representatives about it, was saying cognitive behavioral therapy cannot replace my lost hormones. Cognitive behavioral therapy will not help me with my dry vagina or whatever. And they were getting like quite frustrated by it. And I looked and I thought, that's not what it says. What it says is whether or not you're on hormone therapy, that's a choice of yours. You may benefit from cognitive behavioral therapy because we understand how bringing things back to the present and being in the moment can be so much better for anxiety and depression, and it can help manage our stresses. It's proven. And for sleep, the CBTI for sleep is definitely proven. And women have real struggles with insomnia in menopause. And so if you actually read the guidelines about CBT, it was a positive thing. The thing that's not positive, it's really difficult in the UK specifically to actually get a referral to a psychologist to get this treatment. You know, that's a whole other conversation. But I think that nobody's taken anything away from anyone. We're actually adding to this toolbox of choices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as much as you can do in terms of lifestyle, whether I am looking at, every time I look at dietary recommendations, whether it's for inflammation, whether it's for osteoporosis, whether it's for stress and anxiety, whatever it is, it's almost always the same. It's get your plant fibers, right? For women, you know, 25 grams of plant fibers. That means your vegetables, your legumes, your nuts, your healthy grains, your fruits. Eat a wide variety of colorful vegetables and fruits. Try to avoid processed foods. It's all the same. Whether you, you know, you might have slightly different names and things might be slightly skewed one way or the other, whether it's DASH versus Mediterranean, but it's almost always very similar. And there's no dietary recommendation that says eat the normal, you know, American diet or the normal Canadian diet. There's none. If anything, it's like, don't eat that diet. That diet is going to lead to disease. So if you just follow these lifestyle recommendations, which we know from the fitness industry. I mean, I'm a physique athlete, so we're masters in, you know, how many days do I have to get ready for a show and be this percent body fat? All right, I have a plan for that.
It's a different level. Yeah, it's
different a different level of understanding about nutrition and training. And so if you follow these guidelines, you will not only have a better experience, not saying utopian, because everyone's different, right? And some people definitely, you know, getting some pharmacological intervention, whether it's HRT or whether it's another therapy for hot flashes, that if it's debilitating or even if it's just unpleasant, I mean, if I had hot flashes, I'd probably be the first one to take something, because I was the first one to take even a baby aspirin, and I honestly didn't have terrible menstrual cramps, but I just don't like that annoying pain. I don't mind the pain of like an injury, but that annoying pain.
I'm a wimp. I just don't like any
pain. I always felt resentful about my menstrual pain. I was like, I'm resentful about this. Why do I have to have this pain? So I'd be the first one to take something. So getting back to this idea of changing your, you know, lifestyle intervention, something as simple as your diet, you're not only going to have improved menopause transition experience, but now we're talking about maintaining bone health. Right? Can we maintain our bone health? Can we maintain our muscle? Can we even promote, you know, muscle growth, muscle hypertrophy? Can we improve cognitive, decline? If we're looking at that, can we turn it around? You know, if you go listen to the Brain Docs or other people like that, they're going to say, yes, eat your plant fibers. I mean, everyone says the same thing.
It's the health outcomes. I mean, that's what we're working for. Yeah. Yeah. So, So anyone selling you a menopause diet right now, just turn away from it, because there is no such thing as a menopause diet at all. And it drives me crazy. That's another thing. It's a $16 billion industry, menopause. Mm-hmm. And diets and supplements are the places that people are making their money right now.
Yeah. And I was saying to my gals just a couple of nights ago, you know, 6,000, just in America alone, 6,000 women a day enter menopause. And what I'm witnessing right now, or what we're witnessing right now, is a very strong narrative in one direction, which scares me, because we don't have the long-term evidence supporting its efficacy, which is very scary to me. And, I could talk to you forever. I want to touch base on a couple things. So we've got the podcast, we've got the book. You found it or co-founded it, or you're part of the Naya app. And I know it's in beta right now, but it's going to be launched soon for other people. And I'd love to hear about that, because businesswoman to businesswoman, it's not easy launching a business. It's a lot of work that you wouldn't expect. So you have to have a passion for it. And I know that this is going to really, you're probably your vision. Well, tell me what your vision is for this.
Yes. So I am a co-founder of a company called Naya, and we're based in Canada, and we're just focusing on Canada right now. And it's literally a virtual platform for menopause support and solutions, but we're using a full suite method to try and deliver women everything they need. So what we realized the issue was is this knowledge gap, the access to a healthcare professional and care if they need it. When they go to a doctor, they get 8 minutes to be able to just diagnose what's going on. They may get referred to one of the three menopause clinics in Canada. There are only three official clinics in the second biggest country in the world. And what we realized is that we have like 90,000 doctors in Canada who basically don't have any training in menopause. And then we have 400,000 nurse practitioners. We know nurse practitioners can do prescriptions, do referrals, and do assessments. And so we're using our model to, we'll help women, they'll get a full assessment, they'll have risk profiles done. It's a very comprehensive intake process. It probably takes them about 45 minutes to give us all of their information. We've built the technology platform that will do machine learning to actually give us all of their data presented so that when they spend 1 hour with a nurse practitioner, they have a full comprehensive consultation. And then at the end of that, they will get a report, and that report will either give them a referral to an expert if it's a complex case or they want a different type of doctor. It will give them a prescription if that's appropriate for them, because we'll have gone through all of the risk profile, or it will write a letter to their doctor if they want to take this back to their doctor. In addition to that, the outcomes of the assessment will help them understand if what they need from a lifestyle perspective. So there will be nutrition programs and strength training programs, sleep programs, mobility programs. So we're looking at taking women in from the beginning, seeing them through to the end, and then helping them, like having a hand-holding sort of coaching process. Because what's happening is women are going to their doctor, getting dismissed, going 5 or 6 times, and still not getting the answers. And there's no policy in place for women to have these longer appointments. And so we're working with insurance companies so that this can be paid for by insurance. So it's a big deal. And we've been building this for the last 6 or 8 months, the technology platform, because it doesn't exist at the moment. And we've got about 58 people in, I think, now doing testing this whole process end to end. And we're getting their feedback. And the idea is we're involving these women in the process. So we'll change things as we need to, because we want to offer what they want, not what we think they want, you know. So anyway, it's exciting. It's a lot of work. And it's actually probably one of the reasons why I'm just like, why am I wasting my time on social media when I'm doing meaningful work?
Yeah, this is amazing. We have a lot of Canadian gals, and just, I mean, I just got so excited when you're talking about this, because it is so hard. It is so hard for my clients to access great care. And I am literally, and even in America, it is challenging, but Canada is particularly hard because of the way the medical system is set up. And exactly as you said, 8 minutes. It's, if you don't like your doctor, it's, I think, almost impossible to change your doctor's doctor's.
One in eight women have got a GP, one in eight people have got a GP. That's how bad it is here.
Wow.
It's terrible. Wow. And we hope to be able to, like, once it's up and running and fully launched in Canada, to roll it out globally. Like, that's the idea, because the idea, it's a system that other healthcare providers can, like, take on. But anyway, so it's just reimagining what healthcare could be like. And it doesn't always have to be menopause. It can be anything. Healthcare is a challenge at the moment, right? Just getting the right care that we need.
So, so walk me through, if I have a client and she's, you know, she's got depression, she's waking up, she feels like she has to go back to bed again. She's the CEO of a company. She's got a, you know, like, she just can't be in this state, right? She would download the app and she would work through the questionnaire. And then when she completes it, is there blood work involved? Would she have to go and get blood work?
No. And if any requisitions like that are required after the consult, then the nurse practitioner will be able to order those, because obviously they have that ability. But essentially, they will come to us and they will have an intake process, which is all of the forms. And that might seem like overkill, but we really do need all of their health history, their family history, everything, so that we know that we give them the best care. And we And then what will happen is they'll get an appointment, they'll see the nurse practitioner, who then won't have to spend all that time asking that these time. Questions. She's already got this information. And it will also, because of the way we've created the system, pull out the pain points, the main things, and say, well, look, this is your main issue. But you're a risk, but we already have identified you've got a high risk for cardiovascular disease. It's really important that we talk about that. So we'll spend this whole hour going through the consult with the client, and then afterwards they will get a full comprehensive report. It's about an 8-10 page report, and then they get access to either a prescription, a referral, and then these programs and tools that really are the solutions. Because, you know, what happens is, you know this, women go to the doctors and they'll say, yeah, you're overweight, you need to exercise more, and you need to do this. And women go, but how? And they go, I don't know, like intermittent fast. They say something rubbish like that, that we're going to actually have the solutions there. But the solutions are going to be from subject matter experts. We're not just going to create them thinking, oh, I know enough. We'll get experts in to build these programs. So I feel as though, like, it's, I want women to be able to come to us and then know that they're going to be supported, you know, throughout the whole process, right? So, and then they get a follow-up. Yeah.
Do you have, this sounds amazing, God bless you. I can't wait till it's on the market. And I know it's going to be like a lot of work until that moment. Yeah. But what about if a gal wants to get on the wait list? Can she get on the wait list or get first, made aware that when it's ready to launch?
Yeah. The website is mynaya.ca, and mynaya is spelled MYNYAH. Do you know I say H and not H? H and H. mynaya.ca. And there's a wait list on there. And you know, when we launched this, originally we did a really quick pilot. And within 24 hours, we had 1,300 applicants. Like, women need it.
No
it's
doubt.
Just not there. Yes. So fingers crossed that we'll have some more news to share later in the year. Thank you for asking, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll have to have you back on. We'll have another netter after it launches, and we'll talk about that if you have any time. Because
coming on mine next. That's the next thing. You're going to be coming on my podcast, so we'll do that first.
So let's wrap up here. But I want to just underline again, everyone, Amanda Thee, please follow her on Instagram, follow her on her website. She has a ton of great information. She also is a menopause in the workplace speaker, so you can hire her to come into your workplace and actually educate the workplace around the menopause experience, so that we can have women being successful in the workplace longer. And it needs to be done, because so many women are entering menopause that are working, and we need this to not be a deterrent to being able to work. And for women, that are contributing to their household income, is important too, plus life. So please follow her. She's got so much great information. Go to her website. Please download her free guide. Is it called the Menopause Resource?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's there. If you just click on, yeah. And what I've done is I've just collated the quick go-to things that you need to have a successful appointment with your doctor or to find a doctor. And for Canada, there's actually prescription guidelines. I just get women to print those off and highlight the issues and take this to the doctor, because these prescription guidelines are for medical doctors. They just don't know they exist, right? So we've got to advocate and just be a bit more pushy. Unfortunately, that's just the way of the world, isn't it? We have to ask harder.
Yeah. And I love that. So we're going to end on that beautiful note. Like, be your own health advocate, but please make sure, please make sure that you understand the true choices in front of you, and that you understand those different levels of hierarchy of evidence. So choose wisely. If you do have that high risk, you don't mind that higher risk, understand what's involved with that. And if you have a greater risk aversion, understand as well what your choices might be. So you can find all of that on Amanda's website, guys. And thank you so much for coming on to the show. You're just such a wealth of knowledge, and I feel like we just tapped into it. So
I know. I think we have too. And I think we're both little chatterboxes too. So I think that we could just go on and on. But I would just like to say thank you for having me on. I love what you do. I don't do what you do, but I'm in complete awe of you. And I know you've connected me with your mum and Jodie and a couple of other people. And I just think it's so important for women to know that life doesn't just end because you've got to midlife. There's so much more to give.
No, there's so much more. It's that whole next exciting chapter.
Exciting
chapter. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
The Wonder Women podcast is proudly sponsored and produced by Social Fix. Social Fix is a transformational digital agency specializing in digital marketing, web design, social media, video, and podcast production for fitness, beauty, health, and wellness brands. Visit socialfix.com and request a free consultation for your brand's online image.